Greetings, history nerds. I'm Jason, and this is a Florida History Blog podcast. Imagine it's 1895. You're living in the Florida frontier. There are no paved roads, no trains, no automobiles, no heavy machinery. Now, imagine you need to move a 12-ton locomotive 23 miles across the untamed flatwoods. How in the world would you do it? That's the challenge our story's hero, John C. Burley, had to solve. Born in Connecticut, Burley moved to Florida in 1886 and founded the town of Midland. He served as the postmaster, ran the general store, and owned the sawmill. But by 1890, the ambitious 25-year-old saw the potential of Oliver Crosby's new town of Avon Park. He sold his Midland property and reopened a steam-powered sawmill. Business was so good that Burley ran into a problem. He depleted all the nearby timber. Hauling logs with mules from further away was far too slow. Burley had a choice. Either build a new sawmill deeper into the woods, or find a better way to transport the logs. He found his answer in Shay locomotives, lightweight engines used by loggers up north. He learned that a locomotive could cut transport times from $3.50 to just $1.25 per 1,000 feet of timber. That was a game changer. Burley ordered a used 12-ton locomotive from Ohio. It arrived at the Bowling Green Train Depot, 23 miles away. Today, that's a 30-minute drive. In 1895, it was a 6-hour journey on horseback, crossing creeks and marshes. Now, imagine bringing a 12-ton engine back the other way. On December 13, 1894, Burley and his crew of a dozen men arrived in Bowling Green. They brought with them camping gear, a cook, and plenty of wooden planks. Their first challenge was getting the massive locomotive off the boxcar. They constructed a series of interlocking wooden ramps to guide the engine down. Once the beast was in motion, gravity did most of the work. Next, they built a temporary railway using the planks. They eased the engine's wheels onto the makeshift tracks, then they gave it a little steam. As the engine moved forward, the crew grabbed the planks from behind it and raced to lay them to the front. This grueling process continued for 9 days. The crew inched along, bit by bit, covering less than 3 miles a day. They carefully throttled the engine over the creeks and through the swamps. Finally, on December 22nd, the team arrived triumphantly in Avon Park. They were met with a huge celebration. The townspeople, local dignitaries, and a band all turned out to witness this incredible feat. Bells rang and the train whistled. It was a victorious salute, marking the first arrival of a steam engine in Avon Park. Burley's team constructed a permanent track to transport faraway lumber to the mill. The railway was made entirely of lumber milled at its own facility. It was held together by hardwood strips and wooden pins, no metal at all. The experiment was a huge success. The wooden track held up perfectly, and the 12-ton train made 20 trips a day without a single issue. The town was so impressed that the Avon Park Transportation Company, which had struggled to build a traditional steel railroad, proposed a new idea, a wooden railway. They planned to build 40 miles of track to Haines City, an ambitious plan to be sure, but it would be significantly cheaper to build a wooden railroad than a steel one. Northern railroaders marveled that the estimated cost for the entire wooden line was barely enough to build a single mile of traditional track. The company secured a fraction of the funding they needed, but began construction anyway in June of 1895. By September, they had the first 4-mile segment open for business. It carried 150 people on its maiden voyage, and there was so much hope and excitement that the line would soon connect Avon Park to more communities. But the additional funding never materialized. Largely due to the devastating freezes, the ambitious wooden line never even reached the county line. It took another 16 years for the mainline steel railroad to finally reach Avon Park, but the ingenuity of Burley's wooden railroad was celebrated by publications nationwide, like Harper's Weekly, and it stands as a testament to the power of human will. That's all for this episode of the Florida History Blog podcast. Thanks for listening.